Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Thomas Jane, known from movies like The Punisher, The Mist, and The Predator. He now stars in Troppo that releases in the United States on May 20th on Amazon Freevee. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Jane. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's definitely my honor, sir. I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So you've had a very amazing career in movies and television. You've been on so many good movies such as The Punisher, The Mist, so many others. So what do you think has been the key to your success?
Well, I guess I love what I do and I keep trying to get better at it. You know, I'm always trying to figure out how to do it better. I love all aspects of the business. I love storytelling, you know. And I guess as Harrison Ford once said, he said, I'm a storyteller. And that stuck with me. And I think stories are important, especially when people are going through turbulent times the way we have been. But always, you know, stories are always important. But I think they're especially important during times of unrest. And value the work that I do and the work that other people do. You know, people need a chance to unwind and release something from their brain, you know, whether that's through music or live theater or film or television, the way it is mostly these days. We need it. You know, we need a chance to let our brains relax and kind of go off somewhere. And it has to be enjoyable enough to hold your attention. that's no easy trick.
No, I agree 100%. Now, now that you're a veteran movie star and everything else, does it still excite you, a new project, the way it used to when you first started?
I guess it excites me in different ways. You know, when you're young, you throw yourself in and kind of bounce off the walls that you don't know are there. But yeah, I mean, the idea of a project can still excite me. I guess they get rarer, but not really. You know, a great script is a great script, no matter how old you are. But knowing what to do with it, knowing the pitfalls, knowing how you can best contribute to something, or also, you know, knowing that what the chances are of this project being successful is also something that you pick up over time. I've done a lot of scripts that I thought were terrific and turned out to be pretty bad movies because of the way they were handled. And through that experience, I learn a lot, you know, and I can sort of see the signs early enough that I can pull out of a project that, that I feel, you know, that just doesn't hit my gut in the right way. But that comes from experience. There's really no other way to do it.
So what type of warning signs are you used to seeing now that says to you, maybe this project is not something I should be a part of?
Well, you know, you can get a great script, but do they only have 14 days to shoot it? You know, is the budget not equal to what this story would probably need to make it happen? And then there's different versions of that. You know, you could say, well, if we had $50 million, we could make it this way. Or, you know, we have $10 million. Can we make it this way? And sometimes the answer is yes. Yes. And you could. And sometimes the answer is no. No. You can't do that. You know, I got offered a script the other day. It was a second lead in a really neat movie about a couple of pro assassins who were trying to kill each other, and good script. And I was playing there's an older assassin and a younger assassin. I was the older assassin, and I was looking at this, and they go, yeah, we're going to offer you 3 days in September. We're going to, and I'm like, wait a second, you guys are going to shoot you guys are going to shoot everything I'm in 3 days. And people do this now, you know, it's a thing. If you watch any recent, I don't mean to disparage the guy, and everybody needs to make a buck. But there was a recent spate of Bruce Willis movies they were making in an incredibly short amount of time, and they would bring Bruce in and just run him through his paces for 2-3 days, and he'd walk away with his paycheck. But there's very little chance of ever making something, you know, that's any good with a model like that.
Yeah,
and that's sort of like, you know, in the stock market, they made it illegal, right? It's called a pump and dump. Where you pump it, right? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
That's kind of the version of movies that some of them are getting made today. And I think those should be illegal. They're also dangerous. You're working a crew way too hard. Everybody's running at 90 miles an hour the entire time. They're underserving the acting. They're underserving the story. They're certainly underserving the action. And so everybody's pulling their hair, and then people get tired, and that's when accidents happen.
Mm.
Now, so it's not a good formula.
Yeah, and the thing I wonder about being people who do movies in that way, I kind of feel like there's a promise made to an audience when you're in a movie to say, when I'm in something, it's going to be something of quality. And when you start making bad movies or a series of bad movies, people start losing faith in you. Mm. As someone who will make good products for them.
It's nice to hear that, because I, you know, one thing that I do, and believe me, I've made my share of bad movies, but I try to, every project I pick is something that I feel is that I would want to watch, you know, something that I try to choose projects of quality, you know, no matter what the budget, you know, I've done the big ones and I've done the little ones, and but all of them, and I've come in for a couple of days on a couple of shows and then been the leads of others, and I like that way of working. But one thing that I try my best not to do is I've done it. I've actually done it with Bruce Willis. This was a few years ago, but like Robert Duvall said, he said, one for the art and one for the condo. And that's just part of life. I mean, we all have to make sure that the electricity stays on.
Mm.
And but I try to do as few of those as possible. And the ones that I do pick, I try to have at least something in there that could be interesting, or it has a shot at being something that I would want to see. You know, I don't pick up a piece of shit script. I can't do that, you know, and that's, I'm a lot poorer because of that, but I get by, I do very well, you know,
yes.
But I will not pick a piece of crap script and show up. I just can't do that. I cannot say lines or play a character or be in a scene that I don't believe in, you know? So that happens very rarely.
So when you're thinking about a movie to take part in, are you thinking first about the script? Is it those who are involved, or is it a challenge to you as an actor?
Certainly all three of those are very good considerations, but it all starts with the script. It all starts with the script. That's why screenwriting is the hardest job in this business. It's very difficult to make a script. It's very difficult to get a script made. And for some reason, I see that worse scripts get made more often than the really great ones. I still haven't figured that one out. But regardless, it's hard to write a decent screenplay, and I've done it. I have labored with that screen and those buttons, that keyboard, and that blank page, it is tough, you know, and I have my hats off to every writer out there who puts a pen to page, because that's where it all starts. That's where it gets people excited. That's what you take around town and show your producers and your directors and your production designers and your cinematographers. It all starts with the script, and everybody hopefully gets on board with a cool story they want to tell. And then it starts with who's involved. Who am I working with, you know? And then what's that combination? Because it's always a combination of people. It's very rarely is it going to be, well, I'm doing this movie because of this one guy. Although that happens. But we will see what the recipe is. You know, what kind of people and creative minds are going into this thing? And then, you know, what kind of money do we have? Where are we shooting it? Are we going to be in Antarctica? Because that's not my cup of tea. Am I going to be on a boat? Yeah, because that's not my cup of tea. I get seasick, unfortunately. I love the ocean.
Yeah,
I love the ocean and I scuba dive, but I can't be on a boat more than half hour, 40 minutes, you know. So there's no way in hell you're going to get me to make a movie on a boat. You know, these are different things that you take into consideration.
So your most recent project is, let me know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Troppo.
Troppo, you got Troppo. It right.
And now It's filmed in Austria, and I saw the locations, and they look absolutely beautiful. So the location that you got to yourself, you said, this, I want to shoot in that beautiful locale. Was it, had you read Crimson Lake by Candace Fox? What was it about Troppo that made you want to get involved in the project?
I started a production company in 2019 with a very smart producer named Courtney Lauren Penn. We cooked up a production company called Renegade, and we started, you know, tossing it around. And one of the first things that came across our desk was the novel Crimson Lake by Candace Fox, an Australian writer. She lives in Sydney, and she's a detective mystery writer. She's a mystery writer. I mean, and she's darn good at it. She's a young woman, and I think she's co-writing with James Patterson. I mean, she's a real talent. Me and Courtney read this book, Crimson Lake, fell in love with it, and we started developing it with the people that had brought us the book. And they had a showrunner on board, a talented woman named Yolanda Ramke. So we had a really strong writer. We had a great piece of material, and we walked it down the road. We developed it for a couple of years before we finally got over to Australia to shoot the thing. And it was, you know, not only is it a great mystery yarn, and then that's always good, you know, but the real heart of the story is her two lead characters. There's named Ted and Amanda. Ted's me, and Amanda's this young 20-something Australian crazy person who spent 10 years in jail for killing her best friend, and she gets out, and then she starts her own detective agency in the town that she committed the murder, and everybody's like, what the fuck are you doing here? And she's got tattoos and a shaved head, and she doesn't give a fuck what anybody thinks about her, and she's got a real chip on her shoulder. And Ted is a guy, is a disgraced cop. He's an American that's been living in Sydney for 10 years with an Australian wife, and he's a damn good cop. And he's made enemies because he's a damn good cop. And he gets accused of doing a horrible crime, and the social media and the press just tears him apart. You know, that kind where they're camping out on your lawn, yes, and they follow your kids to school. So he takes off. He just splits and takes off for the northernmost part of Australia, pretty much to kill himself. I mean, his life is over. His marriage is done. He's out of a job. They kicked him off the force. So he goes up there to die, because in Australia, the further north you go, the hotter it gets. Hence the locations. And that's where we shot. We shot in Queensland, Australia, which is it's tropical, you know, it's subtropical. It's got every animal in the world is full of crocodiles and snakes and gigantic spiders the size of your fist coming down out of the trees. It's that kind of place. But in reality, Queensland really is a place where people go to get lost. I mean, it's a strange part of the world, because even with the 5G technology and cell phones and stuff, you can still get lost on this planet. There's not a lot of places that you can still do that, but Queensland is one of them. So you meet some real characters up there. You know, you meet some very interesting people in your travels up in the northernmost part of Australia. So it was a great location, and we filmed there, and we built our little studio on the edge of a giant tributary right on the water, and we had a lot of fun. We had some great directors and some great scripts, but it all started with Candace Fox's book and these two characters, and that's what I fell in love with. Me and Courtney fell in love with that, and it's our first Renegade production, and it comes out May 20th, so that's exciting.
I mean, I think what speaks so well of Troppo is that, once again, you've had a long career, but you very rarely, with the exception of really The Expanse, have done television. So the fact that you are going back to a series for this speaks very highly of the series itself.
Yeah, and I hope people check it out. The other show I did was Hung for HBO.
Hmm.
That was in 2012 or something like that. And that was a very well-received show. I got a couple of nominations out of that, and the writing was superb. So knock on wood, my forays into the small screen have been very successful. So of course I wanted to pick something that was going to be good.
Mm.
I believe in this one.
How does being in a long form series help you to explore a character in a way that is not possible in film?
Well, sure. I mean, it's just a matter of time, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the television that I watch is not very much, because I get bored very easily. I like a movie. It's 2 hours. It's got a beginning, middle, and an end.
Mm.
It has something to say, and people get it said. The long form is, I think, challenging, because you're trying to tell, you know, a half hour or 1 hour drama, and you're trying to have a story, but then that story is folded into a larger story that gets unfolded in chapters called episodes. And then you might have 8, 10, 12, 20. And then, you know, these days, thank God, it's more like 6 to 10 is what, you know. So you have a season, you have 10 episodes to shoot, and you've got a beginning, middle, and end of that season. And I find that the pitfall of television is that there's even Game of Thrones, you know, which I watch because I've got a daughter who's a teenager. And of course I had to watch it with her. And even, you know, and what you do is you sit and hang out on your computer, and then you look up for the good parts. And then when they go back to the boring parts, it's like, and it's funny how I was watching my kid watch the show. You know, I was really watching her watch the show, and I saw that somehow she was able to look up right when it got interesting. And then right when it all that was over, she was back into her computer. And so my point being that there's a lot of filler in these shows. People have trouble maintaining the intensity of a show over that period of time. And because you've got 10 hours of story to tell instead of 2 hours.
Mm.
So, but the advantage of that, if you do it right, is that you're able to dig into these characters, explore them, and sort of let them unfold in a way that can be deeper and more revelatory than the 2 hours. So that's the goal of creating great television. You know, it's usually it's an ensemble, and you can really unfold. You know, I think a show that did that really well was White Lotus lately. If you haven't seen White Lotus, go check it out. The acting and the storytelling is tremendous, because they're able to do that. They're able to pick a group of characters and then slowly unfold their characters, which is surprising and interesting over, you know, the 8 to 10 that they had. You know, that's impressive.
So as an actor in a long form series, how do you pace yourself in how you portray the character so it can build or develop over the course of 6 to 10 episodes?
Well, you've got your outline, you know, you got to know where you're going. I think that a lot of actors get into trouble because the writers don't know where they're going. in a season, and that can happen. You know, you can set up a show and you got this great idea and then they're off and running, but the writers are writing right behind you. You know, they're literally like, they're bearing down on you and tossing you the script right before you go on. And so you're not getting the script for the next episode until the weekend of the time you wrapped the last episode, right? So there's a 2-day gap in between episodes. That happens on TV. It happens more than it should, but it does happen, just the nature of the beast. But in this show, we were fortunate enough to have a novel. So we had a source material that we could base our characters on. So even if the writers weren't quite done with their scripts, and because Renegade had produced it, we'd already hashed out what episode to episode, what was going to happen between these characters. Now, you know, that's a little bit of a privileged position as an actor. You know, you don't always get that, but I was very grateful for it. And of course, set it up that way so that I could do the best I could with it.
Now, obviously Tropolis, as you mentioned, is based on Crimson Lake. When you were developing the series or helping the series to develop, is it how tied is it to Crimson Lake, or how much room did you guys decide to, you know, develop it for your own purpose for TV?
Well, as a, you know, that's always the challenge of adapting a piece of material, you know, page to screen. That is a bitch because you can't, you know, you can't cram it all in. You know, I mean, even Gone with the Wind was sort of a bastardization of the novel, although it remained true to the essence of the novel, you know. So there's scenes in Gone with the Wind that aren't in the book, and there's a lot of scenes that are in the book that aren't in Gone with the Wind. So what you're trying to do is boil down the essence of what's happening, get the best parts on screen, and you always end up having to adjust the story a little bit in order to fit your new format, which is episodic. You know, we had 10 episodes of 1 hour each, so you've got, that's your framework, right? So there's plot things that need to be sort of wedged in there or taken out or reinvented and inserted in order to make that process make it work, make that transmutation viable. My job as a producer was always edging the writing team back towards being true to the novel, because they did have to invent some characters, and they invented, you know, the mystery is different than the one they had in the novel in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, it's the same. You know, it's but always when you know, when the fork to, when there was a Y in the road, I always nudged the writers toward the road that led toward the novel, as opposed to the road that led away from the novel. And I felt like, you know, as producers, we were guardians of the source material, because even though not many people have heard of her over here in the States, she's got a lot of readers, you know, and I want to stay, you know, and that's the other obligation is you have an obligation to the original fans of the material. You want them to be happy. Now, I happen to know that they were happy because this show premiered in Australia a couple of months ago, and they ran it on their biggest channel over in Australia. I think it's called ABC. And it got great reviews, and the fans of the book were very happy. And so it was a hit over there. So we're excited to see what it's going to do over here, because people in Australia loved it.
So for those of us who are in the States and obviously don't know Australian slang, what does the word tropical mean?
Oh, that's a great question. So when you get up there, you know, Australia's north is our south, right?
Yes.
The more south you get, the hotter it gets. The more north you get, the hotter it gets. But up there, because of the tropical heat, it can literally drive people nuts. So they've got a slang called, you know, when the tropical heat has sent you over the edge and you tear your clothes off in a bar and start screaming and pounding your chest, you've gone tropo. You've lost your mind.
I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, I live up in Rhode Island where it's, you know, pretty cold. So I don't think I ever heard an idea before.
Yeah. Let's hope you never have to experience that, pal.
I can only imagine how bad it is. I mean, when you were shooting up north, were you feeling think I'm going to go tropo at any second?
Oh, yeah. I had my tropo moments. It wasn't easy up there. Mm. And also being so far away from home, you know, you're literally halfway around the world. You know, you can't jet home for the weekend. You're there. And I was there for 5 months making this show. Mm. So there were times when I felt like I was going crazy, especially when the spiders would come out and they're the size of your fist.
Oh shit.
I'm like, wait a second. Is that a real spider? Or do I need a beer? You know, it's like,
I only know Australia. I mean, I've never been able to visit, but I only know Australia from watching like nature programs. And the one thing I knew about Australia was everything there can kill you. It was like my one piece of memory from the country.
Yeah, they're not lying. And the other thing I thought was cool is it's exotic. You know, I like watching shows with exotic locations and a little window into a world that I've never seen before, but that is part of our planet. That's always fun. So we've got that in spades.
So in Tropo, you play ex-cop Ted Concafe. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Concafe, yeah.
Concafe. And basically, as you mentioned, he's accused falsely of a disturbing crime. So for the character, how troubling is it for him to live a life knowing that everyone thinks he's guilty of this crime? And also, I can't help but think that if everyone thinks you're guilty of a crime, even if you didn't do it, there's still some sort of like weird guilt that happens to you that you kind of, you know what I'm saying, over time that you kind of feel.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're living with it. It's as if you did it anyway. You know?
Right.
There comes a point where it doesn't matter if you did it or not. You're still guilty and everybody knows it. And it's terrible. I mean, that's when he goes up there, he's just about the end of his rope, like literally like the end, you know, and I think he's ready to off himself. When he gets against his will, gets involved with this crazy Australian girl. And you know, he spends most of his time trying to figure out how he can get away from her and go back to his Johnny Walker and his gun, you know, and figure out how he's going to put a bullet in his head. You know, it really is, and he's also gone up to Queensland because he's grown a beard and gone up to Queensland because he's hoping that, you know, very few people have heard of him up there or care. And he's right. I mean, most of the time in this tiny town, this little subtropical town up there, he's got at least his best chance of being able to walk down the street, you know, without somebody throwing an egg at him or something.
So he ends up working with Amanda Farrell, who has a criminal past, as you mentioned as well. Does she believe him that he's not guilty? And is the reason she chose him to work with is because she knows that he has a sketchy past and maybe is useful for that reason?
Yeah, the second one. Definitely. Second one. Yeah, she believes with everybody else, you know, but she can use him. She doesn't give a shit. She spent 10 years in the clink.
Yeah.
It's that kind of situation where, she basically, you know, feels like he's a meal ticket for her. And that's how it starts.
So what's in it for Concafe to work with her to begin with?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And I think it's something that we explore in the show. And it's something that Ted's asking himself every day, you know, but what it really is, and he wouldn't even admit this to himself and is not even aware of it at the beginning. But what it really is, it's a lifeline, you know, it's a glimmer of hope. Right. And Ted's a detective. He was a star detective. And even though he's not on the force by any means, or even working with a professional, Amanda is by no means a professional detective. Just because you went and, you know, got yourself a detective license and filled out the paperwork does not make you a detective, as I remind her many times. There seems to be a real case to solve here. There seems to be a real mystery here. And that, it takes him a while, but that is what sort of saves his life, you know, and gives him a lifeline.
Now, Amanda Farrow is played by Nicole Shimon.
Yeah.
Shimon. What was it like working alongside her? What did she bring to the role of Amanda Farrow?
Well, the character in the novel is so intense and strange, but also relatable. And, you know, she has, it's very complicated. And I read the book and I was like, this is fantastic. But unless we get an Amanda, we're dead in the water, because the whole story is Ted and Amanda.
Mm.
That is the heart and soul of this story and this show, which is the other reason why I like it, because it's actually about two people. You know, and it's characters, and you know, it's all the trouble they get into. But without the right Amanda, we were dead. And I thought we were going to have a problem with that. I was also in Montana making a Western, and they were casting over in Australia, and they rounded up five or six girls that they thought were at least worthy of, you know, meeting me. And we had, because these are chemistry reads, we have to find the right chemistry between the right girl to see if we have a show or not. And I kept telling Courtney, my partner, you know, this is just, I don't see this, how this is going to work, you know, and I don't know how long it's going to take to find the right Amanda. And the girl, and of course, you know, and it just wasn't happening. And we're doing it on Zoom, you know, we're trying to have a character read on Zoom. Halfway around the world, and it just wasn't working. These girls were coming in, and they were fine, and they were pretty, and they could act and everything, but it just wasn't working. And then this Nicole woman stepped on the camera, and it was like right away, you know. It kind of blew my mind. After she was done, we looked at each other on Zoom, and we were like, wow, you know. I mean, who would have thought? And I said, you know, I never thought this Zoom thing would work, but it actually worked, you know, and if this can work on Zoom, then imagine what we're going to get when we're actually in the same room together. So I'm very proud of the work that the two of us did. She's a terrific young Australian actress, and definitely worth checking out.
Well, what did you see in her on that Zoom that made you, that caused you to know that she was the one?
Well, it's a very special combination of vulnerability and fuck you-ness, you know, and that's a tough combination to hit. Not a lot of people can hit that. They usually have one or the other, or they lean toward one or the other. But when you can get both wrapped up, and that's who this character was, and she was able to nail that, you know. And of course, we had a good rapport, I think it's a real special character she created, and worth checking out just for that.
So, as you mentioned before, Troppo has aired first in Australia and is going to hit the States on May 20th. In your opinion, would you say, is the audience and expectations in Australia the same as the States, or is there something different that must happen for either Australia or States to get engaged with a show?
I think essentially you're looking at the same thing. Look at Squid Game, right? It was a hit in Korea, and it was a hit all over the world. You know, a good show is a good show. Different countries have different things that they lean toward, you know, and they pull back from, you know. And for years in India, the on-screen man and woman couldn't kiss, but they still made great movies, you know. You never had that Rhett Butler, Scarlett O'Hara moment, but, you know, they weren't, they could almost kiss, but you could never see an on-screen kiss in India, but they still make great films. And, you know, so everybody's got their different quirks, but I think a great show is a great show is a great show. That's my belief.
Now, how many episodes is Troppo scheduled for?
I think it's 10.
10? Now, because it's based on a book, is there still a possibility of a season 2? Is that in the cards?
Well, Candace wrote another book called Redemption Point with the same two characters.
Mm.
So, yes, there is. Yeah, and we're talking about that right now.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, we're getting into those meetings and starting to open the book on Redemption Point. So I think that the show was a hit in Australia. They already want to bring it back over there. And people are counting on this finding an audience here, and we'll go at it again probably at the here in the fall.
Where will it air in the States?
It's on Amazon. I think you go on Amazon and get their app called Freevee. It was the old IMDb app, and now it's called Freevee. There'll be a banner on when you go on Amazon, and you click on that. It's Amazon. Freevee.
Well, I mean, Troppo sounds really awesome, and I really want to. I like the idea of being teleported to this destination in Australia once again, which are nothing like anything I've ever been to before, and it sounds fascinating. What is next for you?
Geez, no. Well, me and Renegade have been busy, and I got a couple of Westerns in the can. I really enjoyed that. I've got a movie I did with my daughter called Dig. Believe it or not, my kid is an actor, and she's a damn good one. And yeah. She auditioned for this course. I made her audition. This role came up. I really liked the script, and the part was to play my daughter, and she was perfect for it, same age and all that. So, and she's like, "I want to audition," and I said, "Okay, and she." She blew. I didn't say anything. I just sent the tape to the director, and that, she's like, she's great. You know, we're not going to get better than this. She's your daughter.
That's awesome.
And she can act. So that comes out. It's with me and Emil Hirsch. That's a good little movie. I enjoyed it. It's called Dig. And then let's see. We have a really neat script called Sweet Child of Mine that we've got some actors attached to, and we're putting it together right now. We're going to shoot that. And then I'm going to go off and do a movie called Bad Monday. Terrific sort of action comedy type of thing about a guy who's just having a terrible day. Bad Monday. That's a really fun one. And then after that, I'll probably go to Australia and shoot the second season of Troppo.
That's awesome.
And then next year, I'm going to put on my boots and direct a Western.
Oh, wow. Is this your first time directing?
No, I've directed an episode of The Expanse a couple years ago, season 5, episode 3, I think it was, if anybody wants to check that out. And then I did a 3D film about 10 years ago, longer now. It's called Dark Country. It was in 3D. We did this 3D. I made the very first dramatic 3D, digital 3D film.
Oh, wow.
So that was a real trial by fire is what that was. but I learned a lot. The movie's pretty cool. It plays at the Film Noir Festival every now and then. The director's cut way better than the, they made me add 10 minutes back into the movie because the movie wasn't long enough.
Yeah.
Because I was making like a B film noir. So it was like, I had an 80 minute movie and they're like, no, man, this has got to be 89 minutes because it's just a thing for the DVD. I'm like, wait a second, you have a minimum? And they're like, no. So that kind of sucked. But I was able to do my director's cut. And so I have, but it hasn't been distributed anywhere. I've got a bunch of CDs and I hand them out to friends and people who are interested. And we did a cool graphic novel about Dark Country with Thomas Ott, who's a fantastic artist. He did the graphic novel. He has a wonderful way of working where he scratches, instead of most people do a black pen on a white page, he takes a blackboard and scratches white into it.
Oh, wow.
Really cool style. So I've got And every now and then I'll take them to a comic book convention and sell them or give them away. People dig that, but I've had fun. So this will be my third project as a director. And I got a couple more in my belt. You know, as I get older, I start to feel like I got something to offer in terms of producing, which I'm doing now, and directing. You know, like I want to start leaning in that direction, because, you know, I like working with actors. I like working with artists, and I've got the experience to sort of avoid a lot of the pitfalls that people could fall into. And I just love it. I love telling stories.
That's awesome. I mean, now, once again, that you've acted in a lot of movies, what is about a movie that when you decide I'm going to direct this one, what needs to be in that project for you to decide this is going to be, you know, my next directorial effort?
I think when you look for a project, it has to speak to you personally. It has to be something that you've experienced in a way, something emotional that you've been through, a story that you're passionate about on the spiritual level. You know, I think all really good movies exist on a spiritual level, and that's what attracts us to them. You know, Lord of the Rings, any Dog Day Afternoon, any movie that really kind of grabs you, it's not just all about the action, right? It's not just all about some funky characters. There's got to be a story in there that speaks to the human spirit, to you know, not to put too fine a point on it. But, you know, it talks to you. Why do I like it? Because it talks to me.
Are you going to star in it as well, or just direct?
I just want to direct. I starred in Dark Country, and I felt like this is really hard, you know. and not that I wouldn't do that again, but right now I want to focus on the directing and make the best film I can that way.
Well, I mean, hopefully when some of these movies come out, you come back on the show and to discuss them, because you've been a great pleasure to talk with.
Yeah, you betcha. Yeah, you too, pal. I like hanging out, so we'll do it again. Let me know what you think of Troppo. Shoot me an email.
I totally will, sir. Thank you so much, Mr. Jane. It's totally my pleasure. I'll let you know when the episode goes live.
All right, buddy.
See ya. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.